Well, thank you for that introduction, and thank you for the stamina that you're all exhibiting by being here for the last presentation today. I hope you enjoy what we have to talk about. As you can see, we're a public company listed OTC under the ticker IPIX. And this is our forward-looking safe harbor statement, which I guess because of your diligence, we won't quiz you on at the end of the presentation. Okay, so here's our value proposition at this point. We have innovative science, and that's really the core of the company. The pipeline is really great at this point. We're pretty much solidly in phase two for all of our programs. And we're addressing markets that are quite large. They're multi-billion dollar markets. And so regarding mechanisms of action relevant to the innovative science, one program in particular, which you'll hear about today, relates to one of our assets called brilicidin. And that's a small molecule, not that small, about 1,000 molecular weight, but it's a non-peptidic mimetic of host defensin proteins that has a bunch of other interesting features as well. And you can see that, as you'll see the therapy areas that we're discussing today, there are quite a number of them with our three assets for a little company that has a head count of slightly over a dozen people. So I'll show you now what our assets are at this point. We have three candidates, and they're all good, solid drug development candidates. The first I mentioned was the brilicidin. And the brilicidin is that small 1,000 molecular weight mimetic of host defensin proteins. However, another very important feature of those, the molecule that we have, is that it's immunomodulatory on the basis of PDE4, phosphodiesterase 4 inhibition, which opens up a whole bunch of other therapeutic indications which we're taking advantage of at this point. So I'll tell you more about that. And we actually have some fast-track designation that's very relevant to the pipeline development of that particular franchise. In addition, we have another small molecule, which is an oral treatment for psoriasis, and that's in a phase 2b trial right now that we'll read out at the end of this year. It has advantages of aspects of a 505b2 type approach, because even though we have composition of matter patent on the actual molecule, its major breakdown product, its major metabolite, which does nothing for psoriasis, is a known drug. So we're able to utilize the safety package around that to be able to get through a phase 3 program in a more expeditious fashion. And then finally, our Kevitrin asset. This is a P53 modulating drug. It's a small molecule. We have multiple orphan drug designations, and we're currently in a phase 2A trial for ovarian cancer. And among all kinds of cancers, more than half of them have mutations in P53. But in particular, ovarian cancer, 95% of the mutations in P53 are prevalent. So almost everybody who's got ovarian cancer has a mutation in P53. It's a great place for us to try and develop that product as a first step out. We're approaching key inflection points this year. I mentioned the three assets with their various features. I also mentioned that we're approaching multi-billion dollar markets, and this is across multiple clinical indications. The near-term catalysts by year-end are completion of a couple of phase two trials, and we're looking forward to potential for collaborations and partnership opportunities based on all of this progress that's being made. Now, when you think about potential of the pipeline and you think about the challenges and the opportunities in drug development, you sort of can sort of compartmentalize it in terms of what do you have in the way of safety of your potential product? What about the efficacy, and how do you optimize drug delivery? Could the drug be safer? Could it be better? Could it be easier to administer? And those things are really important considerations across all of our candidates that are in development at this point. Optimal formulation, not only in terms of delivering drug, but patient convenience. When you have to infuse drugs for long periods of time, it really just is a very big drain on people who already have many other drains because of their illnesses. That's not as good as if you can have an oral drug and people can just swallow a pill. So most everything that we're focusing on mainstream is with oral delivery at this point. I mentioned the multi-indication potential, and here's just a little breakdown for the three assets that I introduced you to. Brilocidin actually was successful in a non-inferior phase 2b trial compared to a market competitor for acute bacterial skin and skin structure infections, and I'll show you a brief slide on that later. We've been making a lot of progress with inflammatory bowel disease, targeting the eventual development into full treatment of ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease, but we've made some very good anchoring results with a phase 2 early proof of concept trial that I'll tell you about as well. And then we have other potential indications based on mechanism of action for that particular asset. I mentioned that it's a PDE4 inhibitor, and you'll know that PDE4 inhibitors have been useful to various extents in treatment of things like atopic dermatitis and other dermatologic disorders. So we're thinking about the potential for expansion in that regard as well. I mentioned our Persol as our psoriasis product, and Kevitrin, while we have orphan drug designations for multiple of those disorders that you see there, there are even some potentials for unexpected indications that we hope to be able to develop going forward down the line. So I think there's potential not only for life-saving treatments in some of these cases, but at least for life-changing in circumstances where people are really debilitated by the disease that they have. Multi-billion dollar market opportunities. If you look at psoriasis, that's been very fertile, and you can't go home and turn your TV on at night without seeing the commercials for psoriasis treatments. And I think that there's a great potential for additional oral treatments for psoriasis right now. That's really just one contemporary molecule that's dominating that market, which actually paves a good way for market introduction of a second drug in that regard. So that's psoriasis. Oral mucositis, which is a terrible, devastating consequence of chemoradiation and a number of different treatments of various cancers, especially in head and neck cancer. There's no good treatment for that, and we have some results that are quite encouraging in that regard that I'll share with you. You can see a projection for growth over the next number of years that's quite substantial. And you can't help but notice when you look at what's happening in the IBD market, there's a big need there. There are a bunch of drugs that have good market share, but the market's actually expanding likewise in a good CAGR over the next number of years. And, you know, everybody realizes that there are problems with antibiotics these days. You'll see when I show you the results of our accomplished phase 2b trial for the skin and skin structure infections that there's really a good potential for simple one-time treatment of a disease where it can be quite compromising to people when they pick up these infections. And then ovarian cancer, there have been a lot of stories that you're probably aware of over recent years. A lot of them focused on PARP inhibitors, but what we have in our Kevitrin asset is something that modulates P53 and is really not a toxic agent. So there's a good potential for capturing part of that market that's starting to explode at this point as well. When you look at these major therapeutic areas of inflammatory bowel disease, psoriasis, ovarian cancer, there's a lot of that going on around the world. And if you look at recent deals that really reflect the interest in all of this, if you look at what you can see in this area here, there are very substantial deals measured in billions of dollars for that market because there's a need for more drugs. I mean, and that speaks to that very well. Same kind of thing in psoriasis, even though you can't get away from those commercials at night when you turn on your television. There are a lot of things that are in the pipeline at this point, so there's a need that's represented by the magnitude of these deals, which are well over $500 million as you see those. I mentioned Tesaro and other approaches for dealing with ovarian cancer and infectious disease, which people are very worried about having ineffective antibiotics at one point due to resistance mechanisms. So when you have something like what we have in the way of abrilocidin, anti-infective, with a limited chance of developing resistance mechanisms and one-time treatment giving you good results. I think there's a good future for that as well. The oral mucositis I began to mention, you may not realize what happens with that, but most of the things that are out there right now, there's no good treatment for oral mucositis in head and neck cancer. There's one drug out there right now for hematopoietic stem cell transplants. So it's a truncated keratinocyte growth factor that has to be infused. Doesn't work all that well. Most everything are medical devices. They're just palliative. They're topically applied things to try and calm down the discomfort. But this is not just a discomfort. A large number of people have to be hospitalized when they have this severe oral mucositis. It's a large expense. Maybe it costs $18,000 on average when people need that kind of hospitalization. And they're miserable on top of having their cancer. So there's a tremendous need for that. Only 5% or less of patients are really prescribed anything that does any good for oral mucositis. So we have a strategic focus, and being a little company, you sort of have to think about, well, where are we? Where do we want to go? What makes the most sense? We're trying to maximize the value of our current assets, and we're trying to select the key programs that are really the right ones for us to continue as internal development. But I think at this point, through partnerships and capturing of ROI of our existing assets, that'll be a way to help fund everything that needs to go forward so that we can really bring all of these potential very useful medicines to market. Here's some data, okay, and this is the result of a phase 2A trial for a mild to moderate plaque psoriasis, and this is the basis of why we're in the phase 2B trial right now in moderate to severe psoriasis. These were orally treated, three active arms, 50 milligrams of Pyrazole, 100 milligrams, 200 milligrams versus placebo. And you can see in this plot here where the intent was to just make sure we have a signal because we weren't sure at that point in time. We looked at an investigative global assessment scale as the endpoint, and we required a two-notch change, much like FDA wants to see two-notch changes or more, because then you can believe it. It's not just a questionable shift from one category to another. So in the per-protocol population here, we had about 115 patients across the whole study. You can see this red line in terms of percent of subjects who had this endpoint criteria met. It's the 200 milligram group of Pyrazole, whereas the lower dose groups didn't really separate out from placebo. So on the basis of seeing this, we decided that we would go into our phase 2B study, and that's ongoing at this point. And the market, while this is mild to moderate psoriasis, the transition and bridging to moderate to severe was quite easy because two-thirds of the people in this study had the moderate group. So it's a nice bridge into the active study that's going on right now. And that's a similar design. We have two active arms of Pyrazole, total of 300 milligrams a day, 400 milligrams a day versus placebo. It's about 200 patients with 12 weeks treatment duration and about three dozen sites in the U.S. And that will read out by the end of this year. So we're all anxious to see where that's going to take us. The phase 2A results, again, were quite encouraging to us. And we'll see what happens in the Big Brother study at this point. Here's our abrilocidin phase 2A IBD trial. Now, this ulcerative proctitis, proctosigmoiditis, those are subtypes of ulcerative colitis, the kind of inflammatory bowel disease that's in the tail end of the GI system. So what we did here was just a treatment, a simple treatment with a retention enema with our drug, and we looked at three different dose escalation cohorts, 50 milligrams, 100 milligrams, 200 milligrams, and we had conditions for clinical remission defined by endoscopic results. So that keeps you very honest. It's not just clinical impressions. We have videos of all of the endoscopic procedures before and after treatment. And in all of these cohorts, this was an open label study, so tends to have some inflation of what you consider positive, and everything was above 50%. You see 60, 67, 75%. But when you actually get down to it and look at the videos yourself, then you can really believe what is scored. So, you know, it's trust but verify. So you trust your results from an open-label study. Did you get a signal? Yes. Is it good? Yes. And do you have real hard data to base this on? And you think about the endpoint, including those the three things of endoscopy, rectal bleeding, stool frequency. It's pretty obvious when rectal bleeding is there or not, and part of the criteria for clinical remission was no rectal bleeding. You had to have stable stool frequencies or better, and you had to have the improvement down on endoscopy to a grade called 0 or 1. And so with that, I probably can't see it very well, but there is a bunch of inflammation here and ulceration, and you can see the pictures below are much cleaner. Okay, and so these are the kinds of clinical responses. These are basically simple snapshots of the endoscopy, but we have actual videos so we could see everything that we needed to see, and those results are quite encouraging. Here's our oral mucositis trial, which is still ongoing. It's also going to read out by the end of this year, and there's not a good treatment. Okay, so historically, people who have head and neck cancer, and they reach a certain amount of radiation, typically 55 gray units or above, they'll get these terrible things. 75%, that means it's going to happen pretty much if you're getting treated like this, and it's awful. This isn't just mild oral mucositis, it's severe. So it really has consequences to people. And historically, it's 70-75%. We looked at an interim analysis along the way in our ongoing study, and the placebo group, even though the numbers were small, 10 versus 9 on active, it came out to the historical number. 70% of people got this severe oral mucositis. And the people who were treated with our brilicidin oral rinse, this is just put it in your mouth, swish it around, spit it out, and do that three times a day, got reduced down to 22%. So I'm very excited that we're going to finish this trial off by the end of the year. We'll get hard numbers from the larger end that we're looking at of about 60 patients. And as long as we still have a good separation from placebo and there's no treatment available out there, I think even though we have a fast-track designation, I would be hopeful and optimistic maybe we could get a breakthrough designation and try and get this to patients as soon as possible. So this also, together with the other results that we got from inflammatory bowel disease, I think pretty much anchor the brilicidin as a good drug candidate because it's working in two different disorders. So I think this is going to be worthwhile taking forward. Here's what I mentioned earlier, the acute bacterial skin and skin structure infection. So daptomycin is an established treatment for ABSSSI, and you have to take it for 7 days to get better. And in this study where we compared various doses of our brilicidin versus the 7-day treatment of daptomycin, you could see the clinical response in that positive control was 93.8%. And with just a single one-time dose of 0.6 milligrams per kilogram, we hit 92.2%. So that shows it's non-inferior to an existing treatment. And when you think about it, if it's one dose, you don't have compliance issues, you treat the people once, they're going to get better. So we believe that has a good future in store as well. Our P53 modulating drug right now is in that phase 2A trial that I mentioned earlier, and it's being administered IV. That's not convenient. It's really tough for people to get these infusions on a regular basis. But what we're doing in that small trial right now is doing that three times a week for 3 weeks, and we've been encouraged by many big pharmas we've spoken with that they want us to absolutely nail down that this is our mechanism of action and it could be useful. So we're biopsying ovarian cancer tumors before treatment, and at the end of that regimen of 9 dosings IV of Kevitrin, and we're actually doing some high-tech analysis of pathways. And we've done this in preclinical ovarian cancer cell lines hosted in mice. We've looked at RNA-seq analyses, Western blots for P53 proteins, et cetera. And we're going to be able to compare that with the actual clinical results. And, of course, we'd be optimistic to hope that maybe we'll see a change in the tumor size in this small trial at this point. So we're measuring tumors by RECIST criteria as well. So that's ongoing, and we should have some of our preliminary data by end of this year as well. So you're starting to hear a lot's happening this year, and there'll be a lot to talk about by the end of the year. This is our team of industry experts, as well as some key advisors for those areas that I pointed out are critical to our success going forward. And so I think we have the management team in place to be able to properly execute on the value that these assets produce. We have wholly owned global commercialization rights, and we have a good intellectual property estate for each of our assets. So what we anticipate, as I mentioned earlier, to have in the way of clinical milestone deliverables by the end of this year is the completion of that phase 2B psoriasis trial, the oral mucositis trial, where we got those great interim results, and we'll have the full study results by the end of the year as well, and to get that preliminary readout on the P53 modulation for Kevitrin in terms of ovarian cancer. So this is our strategic direction at this point. We want to leverage our 2017 milestones, and we want to support partnering opportunities. Like I said initially, we're a tiny little company. We have these great assets. We want to move them forward. Partnering is the ripe time to do it right now. Right now, we have really exciting results in our Brilocidin franchise, and we've got more coming on the way. We're going to hear more about psoriasis down the line. And then for a longer term development, we'll have oral treatment with Kevitrin, hopefully for a lot of different kinds of cancers. And so we're advancing our formulation work. As I mentioned, it's important to be able to deliver drug well and conveniently to patients. Most of what we're focusing on now is making sure everything shifts over to oral dosing. We want to build the value by the paradigm of addressing unmet medical need, and it's not only for the benefit of patients. We are a company. We want to have benefit for our shareholders as well. And each drug candidate needs to be anchored by additional trials. I think what we've gotten so far is very satisfying. We want to continue to have a favorable return on investment. And I think that's enough for a little company to aim for at this point. Thank you.